वेदो नित्यमधीयताम् तदुदितम् कर्म स्वानुष्ठीयताम्। शंकराचार्य जी इन हिज वेरी शॉर्ट टेक्स्ट कॉल्ड साधना पंचकम, जस्ट 5 वर्सेस फॉर साधना फॉर स्पिरिचुअल प्रैक्टिसेस, द लिटिल बुकलेट इज अवेलेबल इन द ऑफिस, इन 5 वर्सेस ही हैज गिवन द एसेंस ऑफ ऑल द स्पिरिचुअल प्रैक्टिसेस दैट वन शुड कैरी आउट। And one of the very important ones in that he says is, Vedo Nityam Adhiyatam, the Vedas should be studied constantly, should be studied every day. So Vedas, some people say, well, I don't know Sanskrit, Vedas are so complicated. When we talk about Vedas, of course, it refers to the 4 Vedas, the Rig, Sam, Yajur and Atharva Veda, which are the ancient textbooks, the ancient volumes, voluminous materials. But Veda also comes from the root Vid, which means knowledge. So when they say Vedas, it not only represents the Vedas, but represents all spiritual knowledge. So what Shankaracharya ji says, that spiritual knowledge should be partaken of every day. Every day one should read some spiritual literature. It is required for everybody. Everyone, it doesn't matter whether you are Hindu or Muslim or Christian or young or old, whether you are retired or you are a youth, it is mandatory, it is required. Why? Because our mind gets very easily lost in the world. I was listening to Swami Bodhatmanandaji's commentary on some other text. He gives a very beautiful example. He says, suppose you want to cook pizza. You know, and the instructions say cook it for 15 minutes in the oven at 400 degrees or whatever it is. So you put it in the oven for 30 seconds and then you take it out and see whether it's done or not. You take it out, you look at it, it's not done. Then you again put it back for 30 seconds. And after again you take it out, look at it, why is it not done? You know, you keep wondering and then you keep doing that. A, the pizza will never be cooked. And B, even if it is cooked, after many hours, it will be rotten, it will be hard, it will be unedible. So similarly, our mind, when it is exposed to the spiritual knowledge, like we come here for the Gita class, and so for 1.5 hour or 1 hour, we listen to the words of Bhagwan Sri Krishna and Gurudev Chinmayananda's commentary, and that is very good. But that is like you're keeping the pizza in the oven. But then after this 1 hour, we go out into the world and then all that heat, all that knowledge gets dissipated because you then get busy in your work. And then again, next week, again you come. So it's like that same thing, that for 30 seconds you've left it and then put it out. It's not going to. So similarly, our mind needs constant exposure to this knowledge. If you only read it on Sunday, Sunday I go and listen to Bhagavad Gita or I go to the church or temple or I study, that's good. It's not wrong. But the mind, as soon as you get out of here, the mind gets involved in the work, in the day-to-day problems of children and wife and husband and job, and you get busy and you forget. So Shankaracharya says, every evening, every day, study the Vedas, study the scriptures, and then it's not only enough to study, you know, studying is good. Tat uditam karma svanushtiyatam. Whatever the instructions are given in the spiritual scriptures, those actions you have to do. Bring them into your life. Anushtita means imbibe them in your life, make it a part of my life. So, whatever is written, whether it's the 10 commandments in the Bible or the instructions of the Buddha in Dharmapada or Shankaracharya ji's instructions in Bhaj Govindam, whatever text you are studying, imbibe them, make them part of your life. Then only the reading is worthwhile. Otherwise, you are wasting your time. So they say, study the scriptures and imbibe them in your life. And here we are doing the Bhagavad Gita, and in the Gita Dhyanam, you know, because in the Vedas there are 4 portions, the Karma Kanda, which is the mantra and the Brahmanas, which talk about the rituals and the karmas, then the Aranyakas, which gave us the meaning of the rituals, and the last portion is called the Upanishad, called the Vedanta, which is the highest knowledge of who is Brahman, who am I, what is this world, and what is my relationship. So the Upanishad knowledge, which is very difficult and needs, you know, very subtle thinking, has been simplified by the Lord himself, Sri Krishna himself, in the Bhagavad Gita. That's why it says in the Gita Dhyanam, Sarvopanishado Gavo Dogda Gopala Nandanaha Partho Vatsa Sudhir Bhokta Duktam Gita Mritam Mahat. So he says the Upanishads are like cows. You know, because Sri Krishna was a cowherd, he took care of. So using that simile, he says the Upanishads are like cows. Dogda Gopala Nandana. And Gopala Nandana, Krishna, who is the son of the cowherd, he, just as he milked the cow to get the milk, so the milk, which is the essence of the Upanishads, has been milked by him in the Bhagavad Gita. He has pulled out the essence of the Upanishads. And then the second line, he says, Partho Vatsa Sudhir Bhokta Dugdam Gita Mritam Mahata. So what happens is the cow gives the milk for who? She does not give the milk for us. The cowherd is very smart. He takes the calf near the cow, and then she develops her motherly love for the calf. And so the milk just runs out of her. And so the calf may get a little bit, but then he's taken away and asked to eat the grass. And then the cowherd milks the cow, and the milk is enjoyed by all of us. Partho Vatsa Sudhir Bhokta Dugdam Gita Amritam Mahat. So similarly, this knowledge of the Upanishad was milked by Bhagavan Sri Krishna for Arjuna. Arjuna was the calf. You see, Arjuna was the one who was given the message of the Bhagavad Gita, as you can see here. But he, through him, the message has been given to all of us. We are getting to enjoy because Arjuna had the wisdom and had the courage to ask Sri Krishna. He says, Shishyasteham Shadi Mam Tvam Prapanna. He says, I am your disciple. I am confused. Bhagwan, please tell me what is my duty. And so listening to Arjuna's doubt, we also have doubts about what is my duty, what is my goal in life. And the Bhagavad Gita is the beautiful text. That's why studying the Bhagavad Gita gives us the essence of the highest knowledge. And then it gets you ready for further study, you know, of the Upanishads and so on. So in the 16th chapter, which we are doing currently, the first three verses talk about the values. There are 26 values which we had discussed in detail, and how one should practice the values. And some people say 26 is too much. I can't practice that many. So the Lord says, pick out of the 26. Some of them maybe you already have. If you have, thank God. That's very good. Some of them you need to develop. You know, I don't think I have enough humility, or I don't think I have enough. You know, I have too much anger. I need to develop peace of mind. So you can work on it. And some you may not have at all. You say, I didn't know that, you know, I am supposed to practice it. So read those values and then make a checklist and then start practicing the ones that you need to develop. Maybe the ones, easier ones, you can do first or whatever, or some appeal to you more. Ahimsa, from today onwards, I'll be more polite, more humble, more. So that's how. Or you practice Abhayam, where I am fearless, where I see everybody as me. So slowly these values can be developed, and that's what the purpose of this knowledge is. So after the three verses, then Bhagavan Sri Krishna talks about the asuras, the people who do not have these values, who do not practice them. The reason he spends the rest of the chapter, 19-20 verses, on that, because he feels that that is more important for us. Because in this materialistic world where we find there is so much violence, so much corruption, so much selfishness, we need to see how these people act so that we may not develop those values. Or if we have them, it is a way for us to do a self-analysis. So that is the purpose of giving these values. So today we are doing verse number 16 about these asuric people, how they function in the world. अनेक चित्त विभ्रांताः मोहजालः समावृतः प्रसक्ता कामभोगेषु पतन्ति नरकेषु च। So what is their state of mind? Aneka chitta vibhranta. Their mind is confused with vibhranta. Vibhranta comes from Brahman, means spinning. So their mind is constantly spinning in all these fanciful imaginations. So many fanciful imaginations they have in their mind. And their mind is deluded. Moha jala samavritaha. Moha means delusion. Jal means the net of delusion they are caught in. Why? Prasakta kama bhogeshu. Kama bhoga means the fulfillment of sense desires. Here prasakta. Sakta means attached. Prasakta means prakarshena sakta. Totally attached. All they are thinking of is how I can fulfill my desires, how I can enjoy my life, how I can acquire more and more so I can enjoy my life. And then what happens to them? So Krishna says, unfortunately, the end result is bad, because the karma theory is very clear. If you do good karmas, you get good results. If you do bad karmas, you get bad results. There is absolutely no exception to that. Never ever anybody can free themselves from the karmas. Either you will get it in this life, majority of them, but if you don't, then they will carry to the next life. So we cannot escape them. So what happens to them? He says, patanti, they perish, they fall into narake ashuchau. See, the naraka, there are two qualities of naraka. One is naraka, which is relatively good. He says, naraka, which is unclean. Even among narakas, which is the worst quality. Because there are seven, levels. Six below us, then the earth, and then seven above us, seven heavens. So there are 14 worlds. So he says they go to the worst naraka. So we can discuss these people. How do they function in the world? So first thing is that they have so many fanciful imaginations. They have, their mind is completely confused. Because they don't think right. Why? Because they are so addicted to sense desires, sense pleasures, to acquiring more wealth, more power. And so constantly that's all they are thinking of. And so their mind is clouded. Their mind is not thinking straight. Any means, fair or foul means, is okay. As long as I can get what I want, as long as I can get a position in the firm, or as long as my business will grow, as long as I can make a monopoly, it doesn't matter how many people I hurt, how many people I step over. And so in this fanciful imaginations, it is like they are bound in their cocoon of their own thinking. As you know, when the silkworm is made, the silkworm, the larva, makes a cocoon of thread around itself and then gets caught. But then the silkworm farmer takes that and puts it in hot water and kills the poor larva. That's how we get silk. And then takes the silk thread and then that's how we get our beautiful saris. So similarly, these people are caught in the cocoon of their own wrong thinking. Why? Because their thinking is clouded. It is deluded. It says, aneka chitta vibhrantaha and moha jala samavritaha. Jala, it is like a net, like a mohajal. It is like a net of delusion, a net of confusion. Their thinking is not straight. Their mind is totally clouded. And the net is that of their own making. It's not that God somehow came and confused them, or their teacher or their father or their boss. They themselves created their own confusions, created their own ignorance through wrong knowledge, through whatever even they have heard in the scriptures, not applying them, not practicing them. So applying these wrong values, they create a net of delusion. And the Swami Ishwarananda in his commentary compares it to the internet. Because the internet also is a net of delusion, because we get caught in that. You start surfing the net and then you don't know from where to where, you get lost. And then people say, I read it on the internet, I read it on the website. But that does not make it true. You know, people say, if it's on Wikipedia. But the thing is that most of these internet sites, anybody can post anything. Unless you know that it is a reliable site, you cannot. One time, Neeru was telling one child who was not coming, he used to come to Bal Vihar and he stopped coming. So she says, you should come to Bal Vihar, you don't come anymore. He said, well, why should I come? So she said, you can learn about Ramayana, Mahabharata. He says, why do I need to come to Bal Vihar? I can Google it. You know, I can read the story of Ramayana and Mahabharata from my Google. Why? Or people nowadays even say, why do I need guru? You know, if I want to read a commentary of Bhaj Govindam, I just put Bhaj Govindam on Google. All the verses come, the translation, the comment. But you don't know who is doing the commentary. Bhagavad Gita, you can find all commentaries by all different people, including Tony puts mine also. Now again, you know, mine, or if you compare to Swami Ishwarananda or Chinmayananda, everybody is putting it. It doesn't mean that it has any authority. So that's why having a guru and getting the right knowledge is very, very necessary. And we find that people these days have no sense of commitment, no sense of doing for others. It's all me and my. And even children, youth, we find that the commitment is lacking. Because again, because of the, you know, breakup of families and all that. And what is happening is that nowadays we find kids, nobody talks to anybody. Everybody is on their phone, texting somebody else. Even on a dinner table, there are four people sitting and everybody is on their own cell phone, you know, texting somebody. There's no conversation. There used to be parental guidance, you know, parental advice. It is lacking. It is lacking. And kids, especially once they go to high school, they start getting the peer pressure. And then after they go away to college, 4 years, you know, forget it. So that's why it is very important when they are young to teach them this message of the Bhagavad Gita, the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, and teach them properly and systematically, not through Google. Yesterday, a patient, I was telling him to get a test. He says, I want this test. I don't want this. I said, well, why do you say that? He said, because Google said this test is very dangerous. I said, you are talking to a specialist of gastroenterology. I said, no, without that, this is useless. If you want to do, you have, see, the people, Google is not going to give them all the details. I mean, it is, I'm not putting the computer down. I myself, you know, many times I go to Google and find meanings of verses and all. But you have to be sure with the authority of the information. So youth, they grow up with that idea that computer is going to solve all my problems. And so they have no commitment to the parents, no commitment to the family. And once they go into the college, 4 years, they are exposed to all the peer pressure. I'm not trying to scare people. If you give them the right values and you maintain contact with them, you can protect them. But a lot of kids we find grow up without any family values, without any family attachment, family connections. So that's what happens to them. Not only that, but, you know, they become 30 and 32 and you ask them, are you going to get married? I don't think so. I don't want to see the same person every day, you know. No, that's true. That's how it is. Or even if they get married, you know, they have this prenuptial agreement. You know, this is yours and this is mine and this is my job and my money and your money. So if we ever break up in 2, 3, 4 years, you take this and... So why is that happening? Because of too much selfishness, too much lack of commitment, lack of sincerity, lack of sharing. And that is what the values are given in this Bhagavad Gita. That is why we need to study that. We need to imbibe them in our life and also teach our children. Because the children are the architects of the future. That's why we are so blessed that Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda started this Bal Vihar. And this year, actually, we have had 10 new families that have joined. And are bringing their children. So it's continuing to grow, and all over the world, the Bal Vihar classes are growing. So that is the point, that let us teach them what is right. But what these people do, as we said, sense pleasures. They are never satisfied. Swami Tejomaya Nandaji gives a very beautiful example. It's very funny. He said, the moment you satisfy one sense pleasure, the next one is ready to be fulfilled. You are never satisfied. He said, it's like a Kleenex box. You pull out one Kleenex, the next one is ready. You pull out the second one, the third one. What a beautiful, see how these Mahatmas think, you know, in simple things. So he says, sense objects are like that. You satisfy one and the next one comes and the third one comes and you want more and more. So satisfaction of sense pleasures will not give you permanent joy. Permanent joy, all it will do is increase your vasanas, increase your selfishness. All you can, the way to find happiness is to go within and develop the happiness, find the happiness within, because we all have, oh, we all have Lord in us. I'll just briefly, I think, are there many new people? I'll just briefly explain this chart. I see some new people. So this chart was made by Swami Chinmayananda, called the BMI chart. So we have a body, mind and intellect. With the body, I perceive the objects. With the mind, I feel the emotions. And with the intellect, I think the thoughts. And vasanas are my habits, my tendencies, which make me do what I do. They could be good or they could be bad vasanas. And Om in the top represents God's presence. So God is in every one of us. So if you want to find permanent happiness, find it within. You can never find permanent happiness in sense objects, because their demands are insatiable. So that is what this message of this verse is, that go within and find the peace within, find the joy within. Again, it does not mean that you have to stop, you know, shopping or stop eating or enjoying. That's not the point. But my ultimate goal of life is not outward, not enjoying the world, but to find the happiness within. And once you find the happiness within, then you can become a source of happiness, not only for yourself, but for all others. And that's what these Mahatmas did. Whether it is Jesus or Buddha or Shankaracharya or Swami Chinmayananda or Guruji Swami Tejomayananda, they all found the happiness within, and then they became lights for the rest of us. So that is the goal of life, not just enjoying and accumulating. Then what happens to such people? Prasakta kama bhogeshu patanti narake ashuchau. He says their life becomes hell. Because think about it, a person who is all the time thinking, you know, when I can get my next sense pleasure satisfied, how can I get more money, how can I cheat, how can I hurt? His mind is disturbed, his mind is agitated. And suppose tomorrow he doesn't get what he wants, then he gets angry, then he gets anger, then he gets jealousy. In fact, Buddha has a very beautiful saying, I just heard it. He says, anger is like picking up a hot coal, hot rock, hot coal, and throwing it at somebody else. You are sure to get burnt. You will get burnt first before even the coal goes and hits the other person. So that's what they're saying, that when they have this kind of anger, their life is hell. They do not have any peace within. They can't even sleep at night. They're taking sleeping pills, or they're, you know, taking all psychiatric medicines, going and visiting psychiatrists. Oh, I have so much stress. My life is... Who created the stress? You yourself. And then, not only they have no peace within, but there's no peace around them too. You know, their anger, they are so stressed out. They're working 12, 13 hours a day. Then when they come home, what do? Take it out on the wife, or take it out on the child, or on the dog. And their office, you know, they become tyrants. You know, I have to, you know, my company goal is this much. Or my division, we have to grow 20%. The other division grew 15%. We have to. So they come down on their secretaries, on their junior associates. So they make their life hell, and they make hell for everybody else. In fact, Swami Chinmayananda in his commentary says it very, very beautifully. He says, think about the society where majority of the people are thinking like that. In this age, today we are living in the age of Kali Yuga, Kali, the age of blackness, of darkness. Majority of the people think like that. This Gita was written 5,000, 7,000 years ago and still is very relevant. In fact, is more relevant today than even it was in Arjuna's time. Majority of the people are living in this kind of hell, and that's why we see so many wars. And what is war? War is just wholesale destruction of, you know, of people who are innocent. Now think about the 4 million people in Syria who are migrating to Europe. You're seeing on the TV all these pictures of these poor young little boys and girls and old ladies, and they're all, you know, refugees. They have come and there's no place for them. Europe has no place. Who's going to take them? Where are they going to be accommodated? Their own other Arab countries are not taking them. Saudi Arabia and, you know, Bahrain and Kuwait and all those who have all that money, they have neither given money nor taken them. So why? Because some people decided that we have to establish this pure form of Islam where, you know, anybody who doesn't believe should be slaughtered, and their wholesale slaughter is going on. But they are not only ones innocent. Everybody is. I was reading about Israel when Lebanon was had a lot of... See, Lebanon was known as the Paris of Middle East. It's a beautiful city, thriving, beautiful roads, nice buildings. It was known as, you know, as the most developed city. And then it so happened that some, you know, people who were inimical to Israel decided to set up camps there. So what Israel did, I said, they need to eradicate all these people. How do you eradicate? Because they are hiding in the population, so you destroy the whole city. For 10 hours, carpet bombing was going on. The whole city was bombed from head to toe, one corner to the other. Their planes were toothlessly. And that's what happens everywhere. That's what war is. War is not, doesn't destroy the enemy. It only hurts innocent men, women, and children. Actually, how I was in this century, the war started with World War One. And World War One started because this Prince Bismarck was assassinated. This one guy, some prince of this, was assassinated. And because of that, the world started fighting, and they called it a world war. At the end, from 1914 to 1918, 10 million people died and 21 million people were injured. For what? That's what some author wrote. He said, World War One meant nothing, solved nothing, prove nothing. There was no reason to have this war, but some people just decided, you know. And then they said, after the World War One, they said, you know, we have to have the League of Nations so that they will create peace and no more wars will be fought ever in history. 20 years it lasted. Then World War One became the seed for World War Two, where the destruction was even more wholesale. Why? Because now we had better weapons. We had better planes, we had better missiles, we had better, more efficient bombs. And think about what would happen now. You know, now everybody has nuclear weapons, and now even the, you know, Middle East will soon get nuclear weapons. And what's going to happen with the future? And it's so interesting. I was reading that these generals who are sitting safely in Washington, D.C. in their bunkers, they have these computer programs. Previously, it used to be graphs. You know, generals in the 40s and 50s had graphs and they would plan out, you know, we need to capture this mountain. And so they will send their soldiers. And at the end, they will give a report to the high command. You know, to capture that hill, we lost 5,000, but we killed 10,000 of the enemy. So it's a victory for us. So to capture a small hill, you lost your 5,000, but we killed 10,000 of the enemy. So it's a victory. So for them, victory, they are sitting comfortably in Washington, D.C. or whether London or, you know, Bonn or Frankfurt, or wherever they are. But they are sending these young men and women out to fight. And then the 5,000 of ours and the 10,000 of the enemy, the 15,000 that died, think about their wives. Like these young men who died, their wives, their children, their old parents. The cost in human suffering, they don't think. Because for them, it's all numbers. It's all a numbers game. How many we can sacrifice and how many we can destroy of the enemy. And now they're talking in millions. See, nowadays with the nuclear war, they said maybe whole San Francisco will be wiped out. No, they're doing computer calculations. What happens if whole San Francisco gets wiped out? How will we think about it? You know, I don't know what is the population, 10 million or whatever. That many people wiped out, and then how much disease and how much radiation, and who's going to clean that, and who's going to, you know, bury those people, and what's going to happen? This is okay, San Francisco and Detroit we can lose. As long as we have New York and Washington, you know, these are the kind of calculations these madmen are doing. That is what is happening. That's the problem with the world, that everything is done by computers, everything is done by graphs. Nobody thinks of human cost. What is the cost of all these people dying and suffering? And why? Because the people don't have the right values. They have not been taught how to think correctly. And for them, everything is expendable. Everything is disposable. Human life is meant to. These soldiers on the front, their life has no meaning. If few thousand die, a few million die, it's okay. No big deal. We have so many soldiers. So that is what Sri Krishna is telling us, that these people create this hell where we are all living. And so what can I do about it? You know, I don't mean to discourage people and make them sad. I know this whole chapter is like that. So they say develop a pratipaksha bhavna. Pratipaksha bhavna, that is actually we teach our children when they learn the values in the 13th chapter. They say that develop a pratipaksha. Pratipaksha means the opposite value. Suppose they were studying about anger. So they say whether is anger, bring peace. So that's what I have to do. At least in my own surrounding, I should have the right knowledge. I should have the right values. I should practice the right principles. I should practice contentment, you know, instead of being never satisfied. And let me create peace, at least in my home, at least in my office, at least in my surroundings. So let me contribute to the improvement of the world. Let me at least not make the world worse. That's what they say, leave the world better than when you found it. If I do my job, if I can do a little bit to make the world better, I have fulfilled my duty to him. And that is what they say, develop that value and read this so that I should not have them. If I find that I have selfishness, if I find I do not have peace, if I find I have no commitment, let me change myself. So that is the benefit of studying the Bhagavad Gita. It shows us what to do and what not to do. Any comments, any questions?
It's like, you know, you satisfy one of happiness and another one just takes its place.
Right. No, I think
mindset.
True. No, having a bucket list is good, but it should be not things I need to satisfy, things I need to do to improve myself and the world. So mostly people make a bucket list. I need to go visit Paris. I need to go, you know, buy a bigger house, or I need to do this, or I need a, you know, second wife or third wife. So these are, but instead of that, make the bucket list of, okay, from today onward, these are the things I'm going to do to improve myself and to improve my surroundings. I'll do more volunteer work. I'll do more study. I'll meditate. I'll practice peacefulness. I'll practice compassion. So the bucket list can be changed as to how I, that's what Kennedy said. Now ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. So how can I help this the world? And so you can modify the bucket list. Mm-hmm. But that's a good point. Thank you. I know you've asked that question before also. Well, I think that's true. War does kill a lot of innocent people. But in this case, what he was... See, one war is where you create war to persecute somebody else, to torture somebody else. And that's what the Kauravas were doing. The Kauravas were persecuting not only the Pandavas, but the whole country, because they were corrupt, they were illegal, immoral. It was like Hitler's Germany. Now, if you say Hitler's Germany is persecuting the whole of Europe, but we, you know, we are peaceful. We shouldn't fight the war, right? So if America had not entered the war, saying, you know, we are a peaceful country, if Russia had, what would have happened? We would still have Nazi Germany ruling over the whole of Europe. So sometimes war is required to cleanse the society. It's like there you have antibiotics, you have pneumonia. You say, I'm peace-loving, I'm not going to kill the bacteria, because I'm a very peaceful individual. You know, that is war too. When you're taking antibiotics, you're declaring war on the bacteria that are occupying your lungs. But if you do not take antibiotics, the bacteria will spread from your lungs to your bloodstream, you'll develop septicemia, and you'll probably be dead. So for the benefit of the body, you create violence. And you create a war where you actually take weapons to destroy the bacteria, right? So when sometimes, or in society, when there is a murderer, why do we put him in jail? And sometimes they even give them the death penalty if they cannot be. Again, death penalty, people have different opinions, but they say, well, that is also violence, right? But if somebody is incorrigible, cannot be corrected, then he or she has to be put in jail. So sometimes, or if your hand has gangrene, you know, and then you say, I'm very peaceful, I won't cut the hand. Or the surgeon says, you know, I'm very peaceful, I don't want. No, he has to cut the hand to protect the body. So similarly, when there is a cancer on society, like Nazi Germany had to be eliminated. So the Kauravas were a cancer on society. If they had not been eliminated, the whole of India would have been ruled by their children and grandchildren. And they were very dishonest, very corrupt. So there was no choice. Krishna tried to peacefully talk to them, but they were not ready to negotiate. So yeah, I think there was no choice. If they had not fought the war, that would have been wrong. That's what he told Arjuna, that your duty is to fight against evil. Arjuna didn't want to fight. He said, I want to go to the forest and meditate. He even asked in the Gita, he says, you are saying sannyas is better than karma. So I want to take sannyas, then why are you making me ghor karme? Why are you involving me in this wrong action? Krishna says, because that's your duty. They have to be eliminated, otherwise the whole country will suffer. But war is of two kinds. One is war is done to acquire property, to subjugate somebody else. Like what Alexander the Great did, or what Caesar did, where they attacked other countries to subjugate them and make themselves more powerful. Now that's an evil war. But suppose somebody like Alexander or Caesar has attacked your country, either you peacefully let him take over or you fight back. Then that war is not an immoral war. That is required. You do not want your country to be taken over by Caesar or Alexander or anybody. You want to live free. So there are two kinds of war. It depends on your motive rather than. And majority, a lot of these wars are like the one that is being fought in the Middle East, is not for good motives. It is because one group wants to just subjugate another group and just take over.
I always felt that Israel.
True, but then again, sometimes, you know, I just gave an example of how the country was destroyed. Maybe they were right or they were wrong. We are not judging that. But the end result was that the beautiful city of Beirut was reduced to rubble. And it is the result of, again, you know, misunderstanding, not willing to negotiate and understand the other's point of view.
Get them to put that peer pressure on others.
Actually, it's very difficult. But there are examples. Some of the kids, especially in Chicago and some of the centers, we find that even after they've gone to college, they are very active. Unfortunately, we have not been able to, our kids have not done too much. But even if they don't make another Yuva Kendra or, you know, Chick or whatever, at least they themselves practice good values. And if you see the children who have graduated from Bal Vihar, in fact, our son told us, he says, you know, he didn't say the best thing you did was put us to medical school or anything. He really said, Mom and Dad, the best thing you did for me was take me to Bal Vihar. He said that. He's a physician now. He's a professor at the university, you know, head and neck cancer surgeon. So we find that children who graduate from Bal Vihar do have these values. They do practice good values. They at least comparatively at least know what is right and what is wrong. And At least, hopefully, they'll practice it in their life.
Other than saying the authentic, question the authentic.
Right. See, because the material we have is authentic. It has been drafted by authors, you know, Swamiji Chinmayananda himself and some of the trained teachers. And then the ones who are teaching them are also trained teachers who have been teaching for many years. So it's all authentic knowledge. It is comes down from Shankaracharya.
That's the answer you tell them.
Right.
Reading is
right, exactly. On the internet, you don't know who is putting what. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, they may translate, may look authentic, but it is not. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Makaschid Dukha Bhavave. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Guru Yama. Hari Om.